now at popmontreal.com. A CKUT co-presentation.
What's up, what's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Friends who are really not on our side, they've always got something to say about us and how we are spending our days. They're trying to confuse us with their lies and deceit, but they don't really care if we live or die on these streets. But you and I, we both know the truth, then we will prevail as long as we are.
Me just drove me wild. Wish I could know if you're alone. Don't wanna grab your style, but I cannot deny the feel that I feel when I look straight into your eyes. My heart beating fast for challenge may you pride.
Yes, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominic Ferguson, and my guest this evening is originally from Toronto, Ontario. Crystal Charles started a diverse children's bookstore because she wanted to promote inclusive learning. She also wanted to make books affordable. And so she started Honey Books Online in 2020 and opened a physical location in November 2021 here in Montreal. Crystal, thank you so much for joining us and for being here to tell us about yourself. So, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, I'm doing good. Everything's doing good so far. Yeah, I'm just looking towards the future.
Yeah, so we're coming out of, I'm never even sure what to say anymore. The last 2 years we've had this whole COVID-19 pandemic situation going on. We're sort of coming out of it. You know, at any moment we know something could come up, but how has the last 2 years been for you? I mean, you started your company and you opened a physical location, which is like, mind-blowing, like, within this pandemic situation. But how have you been during the pandemic?
Well, you know, it's something that I just felt I needed to do. I could have waited. Maybe I should have waited. But at the end of the day, I was thinking, okay, well, when is this going to end? What's going to happen next? So I knew that I just had to start during a pandemic. And yeah, it's been okay. It's been a little difficult. Tough for me to do a few certain things that I want to do. For example, when I started in November, I had #TakeTheLead. Mm-hmm. And that was bringing in children. So at the time, I brought in this boy, and he was teaching us how to do origami, and he would teach other kids. So the whole plan was to get young children to teach other young children how to do a skill.
Right.
And right. So I was really excited for this. The first class went really well. But then, you know, as you know, in Montreal, we had to go back on lockdown.
Right.
So I had to cancel it. And then, you know, after that, it was kind of a struggle to figure out, do I still want to do this? Do I want to have those classes again? You know, because when you're a parent, you're a little bit more conscious of what is happening. Right. So yeah. I wasn't sure if parents were going to want to come into the shop again because my store is extremely small.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's something that is an ongoing that I need to work on. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I can't let this stop us. We can't let this stop us. And we just have to struggle and fight through all the adversities that's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, how like, already the challenges of opening your business are like huge, but like when the pandemic hit, how were you doing? Like, were you working? Did you have to stop working? Like, what was going on with you?
Yeah, I had my daughter actually. So I was on maternity leave. So okay. I just started getting back into, I used to be a daycare teacher. So I just started working in a daycare. And after that, you know, I was in Toronto actually in March. And then when we got back, it was like, okay, send her to daycare. Now I'm working in a daycare. And then things were progressing. I was going to be in Matt TV and it was going to be great. Things were getting going good. But then yeah. After we had to, everything was on lockdown.
Right.
Everything was shut down. So with this business, I decided either I continue with my dreams or just shut it down completely.
Right.
So I just decided, you know, just continue. And I didn't go back to work. I still was working actually when we got back in June, I think. That's mm-hmm. when the daycare started opening. So I did do a couple days,
yeah.
But it wasn't full time. It was barely even part time.
Right.
So, yeah. So it was kind of like, well, I had a lot of time to think and really decide, okay, yeah. You might as well just work for yourself at this point.
Yeah.
Because there's really nothing opening right now.
Got it. And yeah. And what was the impetus for you to start the actual bookstore? Because I know in your bio it says you wanted to start a diverse children's bookstore, but like what was the straw that broke your back and said like, no, I need to do this now?
Well, you know, I was a daycare teacher. I was working with kids for about 15 years.
Okay.
And one of the things I wanted to do was, as a daycare teacher, I wanted to promote diversity in my classroom. Mm-hmm. But it's almost impossible to find, right? When you want to find, my daughter's mixed. And so when you want to find books that represent Latinx characters, as well as Black characters, or even Asian characters, you know, it's not as easy to find in one store, or if you go to like Indigo or something, you can't always find it.
Right.
So it was like, it was one day I was in Toronto and I was like looking at, there's a different book list. That's another bookstore in Toronto. It's a Black owned bookstore. And there's also another bookstore that sells discounted books. Mm-hmm. And of course, I don't have that much money. So when you want to spend $23 on one book, that can be costly if you want to get at least five or four different books.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? There must be something out there or someone out there who is doing diverse books that we, as well as discounted books together.
Right.
And I looked, I couldn't find it. And I remember actually one day I was at a different book list and I was visiting family and I told him this in Montreal. And he said, no, you do it. And I was like, there's no way I can do that. I didn't think that I could open up my own business. You know, when you come from single parent, you know, low income, you're yeah. just thinking that is something that other people do.
Right.
That's not something I do. Right.
Right. Right.
And then as I was coming back, I was with my daughter. We were on the bus and I was just writing down notes thinking maybe I could do that. I mean, why not? Black girl opening a secondhand bookstore. Mm-hmm. I never heard of it, but maybe I could. And then that just pushed me. And I just thought about like other kids who, you know, like me growing up was probably like, oh, that's not something Black people do. Mm. And so I wanted to be that girl, that owner that people would say, hey, someone Black is doing it. A Black girl is doing a secondhand bookstore, you know, selling diverse books that represent me. And so I just felt like I need to be that person since it's not really, you don't see it.
Mm. So right. So what you haven't seen is a lot of secondhand bookstores. But a bookstore is a business. And I mean,
yeah.
Black people, we love to hustle. And we're always opening businesses and stuff like that. So it wasn't too much of a far cry from like what the norm is, what I feel. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just grew up around entrepreneurs and just
okay.
a lot of friends, you know, they're always hustling and they always have new ideas. They might have their day job, but eventually, you know, a lot of them decide, you know, can't do this day job anymore. I'm making too much money on my part-time gig, which yes. is, you know, thing. So Honey Books, how did you come up with that name?
Oh, well, I love bees. I love, like, you know, as you know, if you see bees, they're hustling. They're out there getting honey to make one family, right? And so when I thought of Honey Books, I felt like, well, first of all, I love honey. And I love books, so Honey Books, put it together. Mm-hmm. But then I just thought, you know what it also means to me as family working together to create a unified home. Mm-hmm. And I feel that, like, now that I have my physical store, that's exactly what that represents, a physical home. Because some people come and they feel like it's so homey here, mm-hmm. you know? And that's kind of a little bit of where Honey Books come from. Like, you know, it's... In general, yes, I love honey and I love books, so put it together. But I also want to create a homely sense of business, mm. a place where people can call it home. We work together as a community, and I'm living in NDG. NDG is an amazing community, very friendly, I find, you know, very cultural. Everybody's working together. Everybody's helpful. And I would say, like, my customers, when they come in, they always make me feel better because they have amazing things to say. They always have my back. And so, yeah, that's pretty much what that name means.
Yeah. And how important for you was it as a mother to start your own business and to get that ball rolling? Did you being a mother kind of affect your decision to, all right, let me get this started?
I would say yes, definitely. I mean, before I was a mother, I had another business called Think Happy Thoughts, and it was a greeting card company that promoted mental health.
Okay.
But as a mom, I felt like I wanted to do something for my daughter, pretty much. Like I said before, she's mixed race. She's half Latino. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted a place for her to go to see herself and all of herself. Because if it's just me, I would just show her Black books. Mm-hmm. But that's just not her. She's mixed. So she needs to see both sides. And yeah, like, definitely having a daughter pushed me to start my business because, I mean, like you said you grew up around entrepreneurs. I didn't.
Right.
I grew up around 9-to-5ers.
Right.
I grew up around
who were like, get that government job.
Right.
Get that.
Get, you know, work at night.
Mm.
You know, that's the hustle. You know, work in a job you don't like, but that's okay. Because even when I started Honey Books, my mom kept asking me, like, so when are you going to get a job?
Right.
So when are you going to stop this and get an actual job?
A real job.
a real job, because in her mind, that's the only way you're going to make money, and having my own business is not. So for my daughter, what I really want her to see someone, see my her mother starting her own business, being an entrepreneur, so that when she's older, she can see there's different things that she can be. She can, if she wants, she can get a 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. She can be a doctor, lawyer, whatever she wants to do, but she also can be an entrepreneur.
Right.
And what I've noticed is people my age, if they have parents who are entrepreneurs, that's what they do as well.
Yeah.
So we really do follow the footsteps of our parents.
Right. You wanted to give her different options.
Exactly. Right. And for her to see though that there are different options available. Right.
Mm-hmm. And when your mom says to you, when are you going to get a real job? Like, does that affect you in any way?
Not really. No, because I grew up with that mentality anyways, you know. Right. I'm not going to get into it, but I grew up around that kind of personality.
Okay.
So it really just, I just look at it like, well, that's just how she sees life.
Right.
And being, someone from the West Indies coming here, in the 70s, that's all she could have been. Right. Right. Because of course there's lots of West Indians who started their own business at that time, but very, 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 very few.
Right.
And so I know that this is not her world for me.
Okay.
You know, and I grew up around, you can't do this because you're a woman. You can't do this because you're Black. So yeah, it just doesn't affect me. I just know that one day she actually has already come around and said, okay, you know, some days she's still like, so what's going on? But she's a lot better than she was before. You know, she's more accepting.
Open. Yeah.
Exactly. And she accepts that this is my business. This is where it's gonna lead to something big eventually.
And it's gonna create a new reality for you.
That's it, 100%, right?
Yeah. Cause I always kinda wonder, like, what is the effect of this, and like, how do we move forward when we have this kind of mentality? Because there are some people who it can really be like they're trying to accomplish something different for themselves, and it can really be a detriment. And there are some people who they'll look at that and they'll be like, oh yeah, watch me, you know? And
right.
they just use that as like a rocket ship strapped to their back and just fly forward, you know?
Right. And I think that comes with determination. It comes with, how bad do you want it? You know, how bad do you want to have your own business? If you can see the future, I would tell you right now, it's still a struggle for me. Right. As an entrepreneur. I didn't start with $30,000 or a million or $50,000, as some of these entrepreneurs have started. You know, we hear about Whole Foods. I read a lot of biographies. So Whole Foods, the owner, he started with $30,000. I'm not even close. Okay.
Right.
But you just have to ignore what, I mean, my mom is not the only person that told me, it's a bookstore, you know, what are you doing? I've had someone say to me, bookstores don't make any money. Like, that's not where you should be at. Maybe it's true. I'm not going to be a billionaire or a millionaire, but that's okay. You know, that's not what I'm chasing.
Yeah. And there's so many different doors that can open for you from this. Like, I find people tend to be very small-minded when it comes to a business, and they don't understand that the skills that you acquire translate to a lot of other different things. And
exactly. And
maybe, okay, you start as a bookstore, whether or not that continues, you all the skills that you acquired over the years, because it seems like you want to create community around your bookstore. So it's not just come in and buy a book. There's events that happen, like you mentioned, where the kids are teaching the kids other skills. Like,
right.
That translates to more later on down the line.
Mm-hmm.
People have to have foresight in order to be able to understand, you know, this world of entrepreneurship. It's like, it's not just a bookstore. There's more to it than that.
This is just the beginning. I mean, everybody starts somewhere.
Yeah.
And sometimes you start one place and you end up in a whole different place afterwards. Yeah. You know, that's just how life works.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah. If you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Crystal Charles, who is originally from Toronto and opened up her Honey Books store online in 2020, and the physical location opened up in November 2021. We do have to take a quick break. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Everything I touch will turn to gold. Everything I touch will turn to gold.
Yes, yes, we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominic Ferguson, and on the air with us tonight, we have Crystal Charles, who decided to create a bookstore that offered diversity, a children's bookstore that offered diverse and inclusive books and learning as well. She started Honey Books Online in 2020 and opened the physical location in November 2021. Crystal, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for sharing your journey so far. I want to know, how did you format the online bookstore, and then later on, how did you create the format for the physical location?
Yeah, well, when I started, it was online, and it was just, I just had a storage unit, and that's it. People ordered, go to the storage unit, pick up the books, do the deliveries, that's it. And then when I started in November, I decided to open up a store, and it was a little different because that means, of course, you have to have hours. You got to sit there, you know, where it's online. I can move around. I could do other things mm-hmm. when I wanted to. I got a full-time job for a bit. So it allowed me to be more versatile when I was online. Now right. that I had a physical store, I don't want to say stuck, but yeah, you're stuck in one spot. You can't really move around. You got to be there for certain times. And, yeah, but the best part for me about having a physical store was that I can bring the community in. I could hear from my customers. We talk. I have customers that come in all the time that used to buy online, and now they come in, and I could see them. Mm-hmm. We share stories about family, and I definitely feel part of the community a lot more now that I have a physical store.
Okay.
You know, I had a kid come in. This family come in, this girl, she came running down, Crystal! I'm like, how did you know me? How do you know my name? But, you know, they get to know me more now that they see my face, and it's just not order online, get it delivered, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So how did you go about getting the physical location? Like, what was that process like? Take us through that.
It was really by chance, and I wasn't planning on getting a physical location at all.
Okay.
Because I didn't have the funding to get it.
Right.
You know, not at all. And so for me, it was at a point of my life where I was working as a dental assistant at the time.
Okay.
And I had HoneyBooks online. And I was like, you know what? I needed some inspiration, something to help me to keep going. And I said, oh, let's do something fun and look for space. You know, just to see what would I
just
do in the future.
Just as an exercise. Yeah.
And so I called up a different owners and I said, hey, I see their spots. Okay, let's go check it out. And so I did that for a few. And there was this one particular spot on Coast St. Loop that I went to. And I was like, wait a minute. I was here when I first started HoneyBooks, because in 2020, I wanted to open up a physical store.
Right.
And I did the same thing, but then that spot was rented. So when I got back and I was like, wait a minute, this is the first place in 2020 that I had seen. It's a little bit in a different spot, but it was the same building.
Right.
So I was like, okay. And it was small and I liked it. And I said, you know what, maybe this is a sign to just start it. So, you know, when you put things out in the universe, you know?
Yeah.
And so I kind of just said, okay, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. If you can get a little bit of funding, then it's meant to be. If you don't get it, then that's okay. Okay. Let it go. And honestly, it was a shock to me that I got some funding to rent the first few months.
Okay.
And to get a little bit of books, get a little bit of shelving, and everything just fell into place. I got shelves. I mean, shelving. A lot of the stuff I got was from Facebook Marketplace.
Okay.
And it was just random searches. And I said, well, if I see shelves, then maybe I'll get, then I saw a shelf, then I saw five shelves, and and I was like, okay, so I don't know if this is a sign. And so I took it and I went with it.
Mm-hmm.
And everything just started, once I just said yes, things just started opening up.
Right.
Right. And then I just said, okay, here we go. Let's do this.
Right.
Signed. And that was it. We were good to go after that. But it really, there was zero plans of opening up a spot. It was just for an exercise to do for fun, actually.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you say you got funding. Like, how did you get the funding? Was it like government grants or something like that? Or
it's actually from microcredit. So microcredit is an organization and you get minor credits. So they're not going to give you $20,000, $50,000, whatever. They're going to give you just a small amount you can ask for.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically just ask for, let's say, $5,000 if you need that. If you need $2,000, they'll give you that. And then how it works is it is based on, it's a small amount of what you can pay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I went with microcredit and I thought, okay, I like their mission. And that's it. It was just a small loan that I put together, and then I borrowed some from a friend, and yeah, that was how I got the money to pay for a few months' rent, and then you got to buy a little bit of the furniture for the store and the equipment.
Yeah.
And that was it. But everything was pretty much me. Like, you know, I had my boyfriend help a bit to get delivery stuff.
Okay.
But it was really wake up at 2 a.m, go to the store. Literally. Like, sometimes 3 a.m, I'm there just hammering away, putting up shelves.
Getting everything together.
Getting everything together, yeah. That's what it took. It was just determination, my time, no sleep. And it started.
And, like, obviously we're on the radio, so people can't see us, but give us an audiovisual description of what the store looks like so that people can get a sense of it when they come and see you.
Yes. So when you first come in, you'll see a bunch of rainbows. And what that is, they're on the wall. And I had some kids in the neighborhood and some customers. I gave them paint and I gave them a canvas and they painted a rainbow. Some of them rainbows, some of them I just told them multicolors. So you'll see that. You'll see our board, our announcement board, come down the stairs right away. It's colorful. Books are right across the wall, our children's section. We have some toys. We have our sticker wall is there on the left side. You'll see the sticker wall. If you love stickers, tons of stickers. And we've got greeting cards. So it's basically a book fair in one area.
Right.
And then there's another corner. It's like our little nook. And there's the secondhand section.
Okay.
So there you can get adult secondhand books, children's secondhand books. You can get the baby books. And we have some baby toys on that side as well. And on that is also our side where we have our like little reading nook. So you kids can go. There's a cushion. They can sit and take a book and read. Mm-hmm. So don't worry. When you come, you're allowed to read books. I've had a few customers ask, can I read this book? So I'm like, sure. Read it.
Right.
You know, I have no problem with reading. So they can go and read and play and stuff like that.
So you talk about a secondhand section. So you have a section that is dedicated to new publications?
So it's new books at a discount price.
Okay.
And so what that means is I get books from other bookstores who have sent their books back to the publisher.
Okay.
And so the publisher, they can't resell it as new. So they put like a dot on it or a line on the page. So that means I can buy it for a discounted price. And I can bring that off to my customers and say, instead of 23, it's 10, or it's 20, instead of, you know, 15, it's now $8 or $6.
Okay.
And then, and I also have a lot of books from Montrealers. We have a section for Montreal writers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then we even have new books as well. So it's just multifaceted, and then there's the children's, the teen books, and a little bit of adult books.
But that's amazing. How did you end up finding out that that publishers, like bookstores, will return, I guess, excess stock that they haven't sold? How'd you find out about that?
Google search. I mean, I went to school for English Lit. Okay. And so that was I did a lot of research in my 4 years. So it was a lot of Google searching. And, you know, when you Google search, you can't just write wholesale books. You got to just find little tiny words, different words to put in there. And you constantly. So it took me a while to figure out. And then I found out that because I was thinking about Winners.
Okay.
And I was thinking about BMV Books. Mm-hmm. That's in Toronto. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You've been there?
Yeah,
okay.
Man.
Yes. All right. That was my place to go. Always.
That was my spot, man. I love comic books, so I used to go and just pick up comic books, just pick up books for like pennies on the dollar. It was crazy.
On Young and Eglinton.
Yep. Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Remember, and it was small, too. Yeah.
It was fairly big. The BMV I went to.
Okay.
It was fairly large. Like, it had a... Not Young and Eglinton, no. The one downtown.
Okay. Oh, the one downtown. Oh, yeah, that one was huge, yes.
Yeah,
there's
one
on Young and Eglinton. They have tons of comics, too, upstairs.
Yeah.
So that's why I thought you were talking about them. So, but yeah. what was I saying now? Now we got distracted.
No, the finding how you found out that publishers then, give. You're thinking about Winners and BMV.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And I'm like, how did they get their books? Right. You know, I can't just call up Winners and be like, hey, let me know. Tell me the secret. Right. And I actually sent an email to the owner of the BMV bookstore, mm-hmm. thinking that maybe he'll give me some, you know, hints.
Right.
But I didn't get a reply. So I knew I was on my own at that point.
Right.
of course, right? Why would he or she, you know? And so I just had to Google search it, and that's when I found out, okay, it's called Remainder Books. And then I tried to get in. It's still really hard because I need to get French books. I have only English books.
Okay.
So when I need to get French discount books, it's really hard to get into the French industry.
Right.
Or the Quebecer published industry, but I'm still working on it.
Okay.
You know, and it's going to happen.
Okay. That is so interesting because it makes sense, right? Because the examples that you gave, Winners and BMV, they kind of sell books. They're not full, some of them are secondhand books that people obviously come and they drop off, but they sell books at a much lower cost.
Exactly.
I love that you thought about that because I never would have thought about that at all. Like, in order to make things affordable, you have to be very creative.
Yes, that's it, 100%. And, you know, I'm still working on it, you know, and hopefully in the next 5 years, it'd be amazing and huge, like the BMV bookstore. But, yeah, that's exactly where I got my... Actually, that's where I got my idea from, because I used to go there every time I would go, as I, you know, I said I was a daycare teacher, and so I would get books, and that's where I would get my books from.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't diverse. You couldn't find black books there. If you did, you'd find one or two, and you grab it as soon as possible. But that was it.
Yeah. Well, when I went to BMV, the one downtown, it came up in my Facebook stories recently. I found two main comics. One about Cato. So it was the I don't know if... A lot of people who wouldn't remember Cato, because this was like from Green Hornet, but like from the 70s, Bruce Lee played Cato back in the day. And then, of course, they had the remake of Green Hornet, but we don't really talk about that one. And so, like, that was really awesome. And I also found, but I'm forgetting who the character was, but it was like a black character. I want to say they were like a police person, but it was a black character. It was, the whole comic book was based on a black character. And it was like, I was like, whoa, this is an amazing find because it's an obscure, it's not like a mainstream Marvel DC comic book. It's really like an obscure comic line, you know, one of those that had a very limited print. And so, yeah. It was really, really good to be able to find representation. And it's extremely difficult to find representation when it comes to a lot of the authors that we read and stuff like that. Like, I found out that some of the characters, like, for example, Alex Cross,
right.
That character is not written by a black man, to my knowledge.
Right.
And I'm just like... There's something about it that makes me kind of uncomfortable. It's like, you're talking about a black character, but there's no black experience, really.
That's it. We can talk about that, too, if you want. Now that you brought that up, that's exactly what I found out, too. So, I mean, we grew up around the same time, the 80s and 90s, right?
Right.
Those times, you did find, I mean, very few, unless you went to the States, but here in Canada... In Toronto, I would say, very few books with black characters on them.
Yeah.
And even like Asian, you wouldn't find that. And if you found an indigenous book or a black book, it was written by a white author.
Usually, yes.
90% of the time. And so that's exactly what happened to me when I was researching, getting some black books. I would find a black book and I'm like, oh, black. Yeah, grab it. And then I said, wait a minute, the author is white.
Yeah.
And if you notice in the black book, well, I'll say children's black book community, a lot of the authors, some of the authors are white, even to this day.
Yeah.
And there was one author, I don't remember her name, but she, I checked her books, and a lot of her books have Black characters.
Right.
And what happens is, as you know, we're a commodity. Like, people love, they love and they hate, right?
Right.
But they love Black books. So everybody, when you're a writer and you want to write a Black, a book, you might put your character as an ethnic character because that's what's in now.
Yeah.
That's what's the style for today. And I kind of have a problem with that, mm-hmm. you know, because then you're trying to capitalize on something that isn't yours and that doesn't belong to you from the beginning. And then if it goes out of style, then you're going to go back. And, you know, what about all the Black authors or the Asian authors or the Indigenous authors that are out there that are pushed to the side and they can't, publishers aren't taking them in? You know, because, oh, here's a white author who's writing a Black story, so that's good enough.
We don't need a Black author to write a Black
story. Why would we, right?
Yeah.
So we just get a Black illustrator or get someone to just help. It's easy to just draw a Black character, mm-hmm. right? It's not hard.
According to them.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But what happens with these stories is that they're misrepresented. Misrepresentation that's happening.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you a story about a book I was looking for and I saw, and it was, I can't remember the name, but the character was Black. The front cover was a Black girl.
Right.
So I was like, oh, that's a cute story. So as I was reading the story, I didn't buy it yet. I found it online and I started reading it, and it was a new girl, white little girl, went to a new school. Mm-hmm. She was making friends with everybody, and the Black girl was so mean and angry all the time. And the little white girl was scared and didn't know why she was so angry, what was going on, but she was determined to make friends with her and lighten her mood or something like that.
Okay.
And I was like, wait a minute. So you have a Black girl on the front cover, but the story is really not about the Black girl. The story is about the little white girl going to school.
Mm-hmm.
And then why is the Black girl so mean and aggressive?
Yeah.
Right. So what are we telling our children when we buy these books and we say, oh, Black representation, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But what are we telling them if a little girl is going to read that? We already are looked at as aggressive anyways.
Yeah.
So are we now, we're letting our children read these books that are misrepresenting ourselves?
Yeah.
So that was my key, was when I found books, I did not want to find books. Even if there was Black characters, I said, no, you got to make sure the author is Black. You know, Asian books, make sure the author is Asian and so on, right?
Yeah.
And that is one of my key things when I look for to make sure that the author represents the character.
Yeah.
Because it's very important.
Yeah, that is something like I while you were talking, I was thinking about, because I grew up in Jamaica and Haiti. So, yes, a lot of the books that I read were European books. So, like, I used to read Enid Blyton books, which was very fantastical and magical and stuff like that. And they were among some of my favorite books because I loved those kind of stories. But I was also able to read, you know, like, my dad would tell me Anansi stories, and I would read Anansi stories, and I had access to Caribbean authors. And I remember one of my favorite books that my mom actually gave me when I was a kid was this book about Japanese folk tales. And I would like to believe that it was written by a Japanese person, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. like, it was like, the drawings and everything were very traditional. And I feel like it was from a Japanese author. But yeah, like, representation and misrepresentation is something that really, especially now, I'm also a father. When I'm buying books, I'm very intentional with the kind of books that I buy and the what is in the book. And sometimes, even if I find a book that's not by a Black author, but because, you know, the story is about a person of color, I'll still kind of like be like, okay, I'll get it because I haven't found another story by a Black author that's similar. Like, I have this book here called Potty All-Star, and it's got like a little brown kid, but it's not written by a brown person. And it's from Scholastic. So, you know, the problem there, but I wanted to be able to read to my child a story about that's fun, that's exciting about using the potty, you know?
Yes.
So sometimes you have to choose when to compromise and when to like let things go. But for the most part, I'm like, I want that representation for my child because I want my child to have a positive experience of themselves.
Exactly.
Well, we do have to take a quick break. We are speaking to Crystal Charles, who started her online bookstore called Honey Books, which she transformed into a physical location in November 2021. You are listening to Soul Perspective. We're going to take a quick break and play some music, pay some bills. Keep it locked. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
Patty's is on a fast break with Veggie Patty leading the charge. The pass is down deep to Goat Patty. Goat Patty passes baseline to Beef Patty. Beef Patty shoots from downtown at the buzzer. And bingo! It's in! It's in! Carob Patty's wins the game and is now the world champions! The number one in Montreal. Come on down to 9550 Jean Milot in LaSalle for the best patties, roadies, jerk chicken, and more. Or call us at 438-387-4004. Carob Patties, the champions of Montreal.
Don't look at me like a criminal. I'm just a chick trying to find my way. I know that time's so critical, but I'm gonna save the world another day. And burn, at least I live for me. Don't look at me like a criminal. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Take what she wants, take what she wants, take what she wants. She's where she wants, yo. She make what she wants, take what she wants.
FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is a bookstore owner, studied literature back in the day when she was at Concordia and decided to start her online bookstore called Honey Books, and she started in 2020 in the midst of the pandemic, and then decided, you know what, we're going to open a physical location still in this whole pandemic in November of 2021. Just busting down all the barriers and making sure to bring diversity to children who require it. Crystal, this has been an interesting conversation so far. And like I said during the break, I have my handle that I use called Books and Flicks, sort of like Netflix, but Books and Flicks. And what I do is I talk about movies and I talk about books that I'm reading. And one of the things that strikes me when it comes to especially our books by us for us and even movies as well is that the tendency, excuse me, the tendency is for the stories to almost always be tragic in some way. Like the mother is dying, the father is dead. Like there's always a family member that has passed on, and it feels like our stories are very much rooted in traumatic moments. Like even some of the movies that I saw recently, I saw Waterman, which is a story of a boy whose mom is dying from cancer. And he's made this fictitious character in his head that has this almost like a philosopher's stone that he's trying to find that he knows can cure his mom, you know. And it's like it's based in trauma. And there's another one where I watched this like a couple of weeks ago actually, and his father died, and his father gave him a deck of cards, and what he used to do is he used to perform magic for his father, but his father was in the army, and then he ended up, I guess, dying in a tour of duty or something like that. And I'm like, what has been your experience? Because I find that there's, and even when I read it in books about Canadian native culture, like it's all rooted in trauma and all rooted in like
tragedy.
And yeah. And there's a part of me that's like, I understand, because, you know, this is what we live through. But there's another part of me that's like, bro, can't we just have a happy family that, like, you know, when are we going to have the happy family where the two parents are there, you know, aside from like our old school TV shows back in the day, you know, like it feels like now everything is trauma and tragedy oriented.
Mm-hmm. It's tiring. Yeah. That is 100% right. And like I was telling a friend the other day, it's like, I do not want to watch another black movie about slavery, about racism, about hatred. I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
But that's what sells. And I don't want to blame the author for it.
Yeah.
Because, yes, when I'm looking for books, like when I was looking for teen books, black teen books or young adult books, it was all about gang.
Yeah.
It was all about gang or joining this gang or coming from the streets. And I'm like, isn't there a story? And this is about black male characters. Yeah. I should mention that.
Yeah.
And I was thinking there must be a story about a black male character that isn't about violence or joining a gang or coming from the streets or living in poverty.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm wondering, what is it that a publisher wants? Because remember, there are thousands of people, like right now I get a lot of calls from people or like, well, emails, can you stock my book. Mm-hmm. And I'm on Facebook and there's tons of black people who are writing books.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like you could have 1,000 black writers and only 100 are gonna get in,
right?
Even less.
Right
So these publishers are choosing. Do we have a black publisher, a black famous publisher company out there? Not that I know of, that is getting a lot of books that people want to go with right away.
Right.
You know? And so when like you got Harper, you got all these different bookstores, there's even, I think it was Little Black Book, something like that. But they're picking and choosing.
Yeah.
They're reading these stories and be like, well, I want this one, I want this one. And that's what they're choosing, just like Hollywood chooses the movies that they want to show.
Right.
Because it is a tragic. We are a tragedy.
Yeah, right? we're almost like we're addicted to tragic stories.
We are, especially about Black and Indigenous. Like I actually just have this book now, and I was like, oh, it's called The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian.
Right.
But I was like, ooh, that seems like a good, let me read it. But then it is about the reservation. It is about, and it's based a little bit on the author's story anyways.
Right.
But yeah, a lot of Indigenous books too, that I have in my store, it's either a folklore story or something about residential homes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's tons of stories out there that are different, but yes, a lot of them are based on tragedy. And I do wonder about that. And I do think that maybe as a publisher, you're probably looking for those tragedies because that's how you see that race.
Right.
Or you see that culture as a tragedy. Mm-hmm. Oh, they can't have, there's no princess castles and stuff. And, or like, you know, when you
and
watch
even when they do, they do have a princess, you know, like in the case of Tiana, one of her parents was dead. No, if I remember correctly, and she turned into the frog.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like the story can never just be, okay, you know, she becomes a princess and what those challenges are. It's always
she is a princess in Africa. Hey, we were kings and queens, you know, we were princesses. We did have a whole kingdom and
multiple kingdoms.
Multiple kingdoms. And we don't have any of those stories. And I remember years ago, and I also write too, actually. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I write on the side, I write poems, I write short stories and stuff. So when I started writing, I realized that this was before Bridgerton. Is it Bridgerton or something?
Bridgerton, yes.
Bridgerton, before then. And I was like, there is a classic story though, based in Africa. Why can't we have that?
Right.
You know, where we're not slaves, where we're not, where we're just happy living our lives, relationships, sex, drama, you know, and not Tyler Perry, but something else.
What's
right?
wrong with Tyler Perry?
Nothing at all. But I'm just saying. but that's what I want, though. I want these stories, these books, I want to be able to find male characters, written by Black or Black female or male authors, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to see gangs, and I don't want to see, they're struggling with a friend that wants to go on the streets and they want to study. I don't want to see those anymore. I don't want to read those anymore. Yeah. I don't want kids to, when they come to my bookstore, and the Black boys to come in, and that's what they have to read.
Right.
Because there's no other story to it. And, you know, like I said, I don't think it's the authors. I'm not going to blame the authors. Mm-hmm. I think stories are being written, but it's very small amounts. Mm-hmm. And it's the publisher will say, okay, I like that story about that Black character, but we already have one like that already.
Right.
That's how it is in the world, where as a Black person or a Black writer, we have already that. So try something else. But as a white character, you can do whatever. You can have thousands. It's okay.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Black or Asian, it's always like, well, we got that already, so try something else.
Let's try something different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I personally, I'm very, very tired of reading our tragedies. Like, I think the last slave movie that I saw was 12 Years a Slave.
Okay.
And I was like, I can't do this anymore. After that,
yeah,
I was like, I don't think I can watch any more slavery. That's why when Black Panther came out, you know, it was such a huge thing, because I had been reading the Black Panther comics from before anyway.
Okay.
And yeah, it was still problematic because it was white people that were writing Black characters, but then eventually they brought in Black authors to start writing the Black characters, and you have Nnedi Okorafor. And you had, my goodness, what's his name? I can't remember his name right now. But these two authors that wrote for Black Panther, I think Nnedi Okorafor wrote Wakanda Forever, a series called Wakanda Forever. And his name is on the tip of my tongue. Come again?
I said, we need Google.
yeah. No, his name is Coates. Ta-Nehisi Coates? Ta-Nehisi Coates?
Okay.
I'm going to find it in the break. I'm going to find it when we take a break, and I'll come back and say his name. But yeah, those two authors wrote, and then they also helped Ryan Coogler to write the actual film. You know, I think Coates helped to write the film, but you know, it was refreshing because it was a story about an African nation, albeit fictional, that never was subjected to slavery, that was super advanced in terms of their technology, their in all they're super intelligent people. They're ready for war at a moment's notice, but they're super advanced and super progressive in their thinking, in that, you know, the army was the main army that protected the king were women, you mm-hmm. know? So that was refreshing, even though it was like for a white company and everything. It was just nice to have a different story. But mm-hmm. they couldn't not remove the tragedy from it.
Right. I was going to say that, because didn't he die? Did the dad die?
The father died previously. The father died previously, and then the father of the cousin was killed by the father of the king. You know, mm-hmm. so it still had those elements of fighting, and there was a bit of that gang stuff in there, but the emphasis was on like this African nation. But I'm so tired. Like, the book The Hate U Give, it's a really wonderful book. But again, it was about gang violence and many people who died, and this young girl that's dealing with the tragedy of having witnessed her friend get shot in front of her. You know, and I'm just like, where is our story of like the little girl that lives in, I don't know, rural Kenya, and mm-hmm. she goes out into the woods and she meets all these magical creatures and has an adventure? Like, where is that story? Where's the story of the little boy that lives in Jamaica that would go up to his friend's house, and they would go through like a pathway in the forest and mm-hmm. go and find gold and have all these magic. Where are those stories? You know, parents dead, no nothing like that. Just we having a fantastical
adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where are those stories?
Yeah, they're there. I can't remember her name. There's a writer that I had. I follow her on Instagram, but I can't remember her name now. But I mean, they're there. It's just-